it's becoming a monthly ritual. The UK once again posting a fall in car sales on Thursday. Overall registrations were down 1.6% on the year. There is a big silver lining, though. Sales of electric vehicles soared. They were up 377.5%, to be precise. Demand was spurred by new vehicles, including Tesla's more affordable Model 3.
The US-China trade war has claimed its victims, but for the moment, Louis Vuitton is not among them. In fact, the French luxury goods maker this week celebrated the inauguration of a new leatherworks factory in western France. Chinese clients, and not just those in China, accounting for around a third of all sales. Parent company LVMH invested €1 billion in new production in France last year.
The Taliban on Sunday said U.S. President Donald Trump's abrupt decision to cancel peace talks in an effort to end the war in Afghanistan would result in fresh losses to American lives. Hours after Trump unexpectedly canceled a Sunday meeting with Taliban leaders at Camp David, the Islamist group issued a statement saying, quote, both sides were busy with preparation for the announcement and signing the peace deal, but now the U.S. president called off the peace dialogue. This will lead to more losses to the U.S.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is September 9th. It's 5:11 in the morning, and we thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business weekend, another business day getting underway here. We have lots to cover this morning on the program. The seven generations of the Stenger family in Naperville, highlighting the upcoming Oktoberfest festivities there. We will have two members of the family with us today to talk to us about not only seven generations of the family, but an entrepreneurial spirit that exists with families like these in the Chicago area. Ronald and Nick Stenger will be with us this morning momentarily. We'll bring them in this morning in just a few minutes. A little bit later in the program, I bet your kid wears a school uniform. School uniforms are on the rise across the country, even for the littlest of students, and that's changing back-to-school shopping habits. Abba Badarai will be here this morning, a retail reporter at the Washington Post, to talk to us about some of the trends that will likely surprise you. That'll be at about 5:38 again this morning in the second segment of the program. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour. So let's get going with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings on Wall Street this morning after stocks closed out Friday, mostly higher, to wrap up a second straight week of gains. Optimism over trade talks with China outweighed some economic concerns. This morning, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street. Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures each up about a quarter of a percent this morning. On the world markets, London lower out of all of Europe this morning by about a quarter of a percent. Everything else higher in Germany by nearly a half a percent, fractionally in France. In Asia, Hong Kong, the only of the markets in the red this morning, but just barely. The Nikkei ending the day in Japan up nearly 118 points, more than a half a percent. In China, up nearly three quarters of a percent. And oil is trading in the U.S. at $56.98 a barrel, which is up about 50 cents. A couple of stories as we get going this morning. Antitrust negotiations investigations into Google and Facebook are expected to formally launch this week. Nearly 40 attorneys general will be at a news conference outside the U.S. Supreme Court today to make the announcement. The investigation will be looking into whether the large companies squeeze out competition when it comes to digital advertising, information markets, and consumer choice. The probe will also look into how the tech giants handle privacy issues. The partisan state-led effort will reportedly complement federal investigations already underway. J.P. Morgan Chase is putting together an index to measure the impact of presidential tweets. The prolific tweeting by the president can have an effect on the markets. We've seen that in a number of different ways, not only on the stock market, but the bond market as well. To try to measure the impact on the bond markets, J.P. Morgan Chase has created something that they're calling the Covfefe Index, named after President Trump's famously cryptic Covfefe tweet. The index tries to look at the effect of the tweets on the volatility for 2- and 5-year Treasury notes, People behind the new index say it makes sense as Trump has lately been focusing many tweets toward the Federal Reserve. And it's nearly Apple time. Apple's big event almost here. The latest showcase of products is to be tomorrow. Apple is usually vague on what will be debuted, and that is the case again this year. However, it's traditionally at these events that Apple reveals new iPhones, and we expect that tomorrow. Many of the rumors circulating suggest Apple will show off an improved camera capable of shooting ultra-wide shots. There may also be updates to other products, including computers, tablets, and smartwatches. Let's begin front and center this morning on our CEO Spotlight. The 10th annual Oktoberfest in Naperville is scheduled for October 4th through the 5th at Napers Settlement. The event this year will honor the 50th anniversary of the Naperville Heritage Society and families who've lived in Naperville since 1850, families like the Stenger family. Seven generations of the Stenger family, as a matter of fact, have called Naperville home. You may recognize that name from the famous Stenger Brewery. Some of its original artifacts will be on display at the Oktoberfest event. We're happy to have two members of the family this morning, Ron Stenger and Nick Stenger, with us this morning. Both are financial services professionals, also entrepreneurs this morning, and we're happy you're here this morning. Nick and Ron, welcome to the broadcast. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a conversation that is going to be a little different from some of the other conversations we have, in that it's going to be sort of a history lesson, but it's also going to be a story about today as well. I want to talk to you about the family, the Stenger family, place in Naperville, and the generations, seven generations of Stengers in the community, what the history is and what is happening now moving to the future. And Ron, I'm going to begin with you by asking a little bit about that history. Talk to us a little bit about how you and your family came to Naperville and what the claim to fame is.
Our family came, Peter Stenger and his family. Peter brought his entire family over, nine children, in the 1840s and settled in Naperville. And then they relied on their previous training in the brewery business, and they set up a brewery. And that became known as the Stenger Brewery, and that was one of the largest employers. It became one of the largest employers in the city for many years.
In the 19th century, there were a lot of German families that settled in this area. You were, before we came on the air today, talking about the percentages. I never knew it was as high as a quarter of a percent of the population. So there were a lot of Germans that came over, and being a brewer seemed to be the thing to do.
Well, Naperville had all the ingredients. They had large pastures, lots of grass. They could grow their hops and barley. They could have the limestone where they could construct the buildings. They had just truly magnificent buildings. They built a malt house and a brewery. They were three stories tall out of limestone. And then they were able to dig into the limestone and make fairly large tunnels to store the beer, because back then there was no refrigeration.
Yeah, and this at the time we were switching sort of from agriculture industry of agriculture to these industries, and the farmers even at the time got in on this, didn't they?
Yep, the farmers even sold ice to the brewery in the wintertime. The thing we want to talk about too is that back then water really wasn't safe to drink, and so the Stengers came and they introduced lager beer, which previous to the German immigrants coming over, was not available in the country. So the lager beer was a very robust flavor, and it was something that people began to really enjoy.
Again, we're talking about the mid-1800s to late 1800s, and the brewery not only made a name for the family, the Stenger family, but it really created the foundation of the community, didn't it? So it helped build Naperville.
Well, it sure did. It was the largest distributor in Naperville, but it was sold way beyond the borders of Naperville. Mm-hmm. So it was delivered in the city and into numerous other places, all in barrels, of course, because bottling hadn't gotten off the ground yet.
Our conversation today is interesting. We want to talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial spirit, how in the 1800s, and even today, it's still alive in Naperville and many other communities. The idea that somebody comes to the United States with just the clothes on their back, maybe a little bit of money or whatever, and is able to create an industry is amazing to me just to think about today, but it's important to our history, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, the back then, you know, as I said, water wasn't as safe to drink, and so this lager beer came in, and it was something that, you know, really replaced, for many cases, people would go and you would just go on a Sunday and fill up your large, they took large containers and filled it up and brought it home. But it was, the Germans introduced a leisure time factor in the country. On Sundays was, for the Germans, Sunday was designed to be a leisure day. So they went to church, it was important, but it was also important just to relax and have leisure. Mm-hmm. And this coincided with the religious revival that was occurring at the time, mainly Protestant, where Sundays were important.
There is an interesting side note to this story that I think we should probably bring in now. There was an employee of the Stenger Brewery that I think when we talk about it here, people are going to recognize immediately. Ron, tell us about Adolf Kors.
Yes, young Adolf came as an immigrant from Germany and signed on with the Stengers and worked his way up to become the head brewmaster for the Stenger Brewery. He was, according to the records we have, he was the highest paid employee there. And it was really a good fit, and it would have been a logical conclusion if he would have married into the family, and then John Stenger would have had someone to carry on the name. However, not finding that to be an effective value proposition, or as William Kors, the grandson, writes to us saying that he was a young man and not really willing to settle down, he left and found his way to Colorado.
It's interesting. It's would it have been what renamed, do you think, to the Kors Brewery, or would it have stayed Stenger?
Well, yeah, that's speculation. Right. But we know that he did learn quite a bit in his time with the Stengers in Naperville, and that time served him well as he went out west.
I want to bring in your son, Nick, who's here with us. Nick, again, thanks for being on with us. You're sitting here next to your dad hearing all of these stories about history. It's on you now, right, to carry forward the Stenger history and to sort of put that entrepreneurial spirit on the next generation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, I can remember growing up just having the rich history in Naperville and the multiple generations. My grandfather's still alive, so he's number five, and my dad's number six, and I'm, of course, number seven. So having those three generations really gives you this sense of loyalty to the Naperville area, and it really makes you proud to be a Napervillian. And that's something that my coworkers will joke about with me, that we love Naperville so much. It kind of oozes out of us, and it's something that gives you a sense of pride.
Your family's been very active in making sure that the history is preserved. I was looking at, there's a documentary that's on that I think people could probably still find, but I've been looking at some old photographs, and I see the old brewery photograph, the plant here. What has it been like to preserve the history over the years? And I know we'll bring Ron back in too, but I get your take on what it's like to preserve this history and make sure it's seen by future generations, maybe your kids.
Yeah, I think it all comes back to our entrepreneurial roots, and that's kind of what we're alluding to, is every generation since Peter Stenger of the Stenger family has been really entrepreneurial, and that's so critical to our core. And I think you see every generation pass the torch to the next generation, pass this entrepreneurial torch of personal responsibility. And really, it comes back to the American dream. And really, you know, seeing that it's real, that it's alive, that if you do put that work in and you teach the next generation, that you can pass down that American dream to the next generation.
I know you have some pretty strong thoughts on that. What would you say if people would tell you the American dream is dead or dying?
Yeah, I think there's two buckets of people who, you know, one will say the American dream is dead completely. Others say it only exists maybe for an upper echelon of the population. And I disagree with both of those opinions. I think, our family is a great example of a family that's taken personal responsibility. Every generation has worked hard. And my grandfather had a realty business in Naperville and started from almost nothing. And then that transitioned with my dad to a financial business, which was started from the ground up, from nothing. And I would say to those people that, you know, think the American dream is dead, or would tell other people that, I think they're missing the big picture of this country. And that's what we've been talking about is, you know, when an immigrant comes here, they have an opportunity like no other country to excel and make something of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Ron, back to the preserving the history part of this. I know you were part of the Naperville Heritage Society on the board there. That was key to helping preserve some of your family history, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. They've done a wonderful job in using the archives to make the story come alive. We continue to document it. There'll be at Naper Settlement coming up in beginning of October, there'll be Oktoberfest, and many of the artifacts from the Stenger Brewery will be on display at that time.
What is the prize possession? What is the prize artifact in your mind?
If
you had to pick one.
There's a couple of fragmented bottles that are quite interesting. They toward the end of the brewery business, they begin experimenting with some bottles, but it really never did get off the ground. But they did have an experimental run of bottles. So to this day, whenever there's any privy digs in Naperville, whenever there's any pieces, broken pieces, things to be found, why people really tend to get excited if they think they have any remnants of a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there, again, there's the vats. There's so many other things that are on display there. But they really only sold it in kegs and barrels and shipped it out. And then the bottles were just starting to come in at that time.
The documentary I referred to earlier is called, the name of it is Two Brothers, One Beer, and the American Dream, right?
Yes.
That's still out there for people to see, isn't it?
Oh, yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about this, the entrepreneurial spirit. For immigrants who are coming to this country today, and even others who are here already, what's the secret sauce? What makes you an entrepreneur? What makes a successful entrepreneur?
Well, I think you need to make sure you have a strong desire to create value for other people. You know, that's what it's all about, is to understand what people are looking for, what they want to accomplish, what some of the concerns that they have are, and then help people to understand that they have strengths. You know, everyone has certain strengths, and to capitalize on those strengths, and by doing that, you can overcome many obstacles and therefore be where you want to be.
Nick, what would you say that secret sauce includes as the torchbearer on for this new generation? Is it different? Do you see something different in your mind in this area?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I think you know, if you think about the economy, almost like a garden, you need successful ingredients to make a garden work. You need fertile soil. You need good sunlight. You need fences to keep the rabbits out and scarecrows to keep the birds away. And the economy is just like that, too. You look at all over the world what's going on. Our economy has been number one forever, since almost the inception of the United States. And you look at what we're doing here in our country versus what's going on in other places. And I think it all goes back to the rule of law enabled by personal property rights. And it's just entrepreneurs who can wake up in the morning, work hard, and know at the end of the day, they're going to keep what they earn, and they eat what they kill. And if you go back to that and you apply those principles to the garden, to any economy, entrepreneurs are incentivized when they know they're going to keep what they earn. And, you know, I think the clearest example is you look at Europe. Tech as a percentage of Europe is about 5% of the economy. Here in the United States, it's over 20%. That's a huge difference. And I think people are more willing to start companies here because they know they're going to be rewarded over the long run.
How welcoming, and there's been a lot of discussion politically about this over the last 6 months. How open should we be, the U.S., to immigrants?
Well, I think we absolutely should be open to immigrants. We're a country of immigrants. Our family were immigrants seven generations ago. And absolutely, if we have the right rules in place and the right procedures in place to ensure that legal immigrants are still allowed to come here, still rewarded, still have those opportunities that we were given seven generations ago. I think that's so key.
Ron, your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when I look back at the Stenger family and when they came from Germany in the 1840s and what they had to risk to do that, it was just really incredible. And I think that that story should be an inspiration to other families, other immigrants, that if they work hard, they can succeed.
I love the story, the entrepreneurial story of your family. Started as brewers, then to real estate, now financial planning. I think there was some sports in there as well. So being an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily have to be the same entrepreneur in the same industry, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about this country is that you can have the freedom to fulfill your dreams and your desires and to capitalize on your strengths. Everybody's wired a little differently, and I think that that's what gives our country the richness that is missing in so many other places.
I bet you for every story like yours, there's probably 5 or 6 or 10 or 20, right? And probably even in Naperville, I would imagine, other families that have same history as you.
Oh, absolutely. There's a number of Naperville names that come to mind that have got 4, 5, 6 generations. Absolutely.
Yeah. So as we leave you this morning, what's the takeaway? You mentioned that the Oktoberfest is coming up. We'll be able to see some of these items from your family's history. But the takeaway from the entrepreneurial spirit is what?
Well, I think, everyone needs to search themselves and find out what their unique ability is. Everybody's wired a little bit differently. And the challenge, I think, for all of us is to find out what really is our unique ability and then make sure that we focus on that. If I was talking to any mothers with their children asking about, what they should do, I would say, focus on your child's unique ability. What are they really good at? Not everybody's wired to be in sales. Not everybody's called out to be task-oriented, but try to define what it is that you're good at and then how you can add value for people using that unique ability.
Nick, you are the recipient of all of this history and the background and the experience. How do you pay it forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, my real ability, unique ability to call it that, is, showing the next group of kids, the next group of junior high kids and high school students who I've worked closely with through my involvement at Wheaton Bible Church over the years, really showing them the opportunities that they can take a hold of. It might not necessarily be college for everybody. It might be starting a business, or it might be going to a trade school and learning something like you, to your point, about your unique ability, something that you're really good at, and capitalizing on that. Mm-hmm. One thing I would, in summary too, if you go back to when Ronald Reagan was president in the 1980s, he was at the G7 summit. And he's sitting across from the German chancellor at the time, Helmut Kohl. And in front of all the leaders, the biggest leaders of the world, Helmut Kohl in the 1980s asked Ronald Reagan, "Tell us about the American miracle." And that's incredible that today we're having the same thing happen where leaders across the world are asking us, "Tell us about the American miracle. Tell us what's so special about this place." And they were doing it years ago. Just like they are today.
Yeah. Well, Nick, Ron, we appreciate you coming in today. All the best to both of you. And thanks for bringing all this rich history to all of our attentions again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great.
Ron and Nick Stenger of the Stenger family. October 4th through the 5th is the Oktoberfest, 10th annual Oktoberfest in Naperville at the Naper Settlement. Again, the event honoring the 50th anniversary of the Naperville Heritage Society and families who've lived in Naperville since 1850, like the Stenger family. You can find more at napersettlement.org. And we're going to continue our conversation with Nick and Ron after the bell this morning and post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. It is Monday here on The Opening Bell, and our focus now shifts to back-to-school shopping. More and more schools are requiring kids to wear uniforms these days, and it could be affecting back-to-school sales. And the bottom line for some retailers, joining us this morning to talk a little bit about it, Abba Batarai, who is a retail reporter at The Washington Post. Abba, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Your story, when I saw your story, I thought, okay, this makes sense. Lots of kids wear uniforms, but I was thinking grade school and high school. Your story focuses, too, even for toddlers, uniforms have become a thing now.
Absolutely. So over the last 40 years, we've seen sort of a shift to uniforms, not just at private schools, but at public schools, increasingly at charter schools, and now at preschools and daycares, where children as young as 2 months at some of these centers that I talk to are wearing, you know, mandated collared shirts and khakis or particular colors on top and bottom.
Give us a little bit of history. Remind us of the history of how uniforms started. This was initially an idea that was to spur gang violence, wasn't it?
It was. That's how it sort of made its way into big city public schools in the late 1980s. The idea was that if everybody was wearing the same thing, there would be a sense of inclusion, that it would deter violence and crime in the classroom. And it's really picked up since then. Teachers and administrators across the country say that they're seeing a lot more benefits beyond those as well. They're seeing a sense of community. They're seeing school spirit. At the younger level, at preschools and daycares, teachers say that it's just easier to keep an eye on kids. You know, if they're at the playground or if they're out for a walk, it's much more visible sort of who belongs to their class and who doesn't.
There is some criticism, though, too, from some parents in some sectors, isn't there? I mean, that one is, well, you tell us what the criticism is.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are worries that this is stifling creativity, that this is stifling individuality, particularly at a very young age when children are learning to dress themselves. They take pride in sort of the outfits that they put together. And so some parents and some academics have raised concerns that maybe this is a way to sort of silence that and get kids to color within the lines, for lack of a better term.
Right. Is there any, do they have any weight on that? Is there any truth to any of that?
You know, there are studies that sort of show both sides of the spectrum, and I haven't seen any research for the youngest group of students yet. I mean, this is still a very new phenomenon that toddlers and infants are wearing uniforms.
I think people who are listening this morning might remember back-to-school shopping a number of different ways. I think for some of us, it was just a nightmare going to school because, you know, my family went to Sears and it was always, you know, I was always in the big kid size. But then there are some kids I know who love going back to school and shopping for clothes. So this could be a formative thing in both areas, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the big takeaway here is that this helps standardize the process for everybody. You know, what's interesting is when I was talking to retailers that they said there are very clear patterns when people are buying uniforms. They'll usually stock up in July or August, you know, for the whole year and then replenish maybe sometime in January, you know, or as seasons change or as they grow out of sizes here and there. But on the flip side, for traditional back-to-school shopping, there's sort of a surge in August before school starts. And then a lot of retailers said they saw another spike after school started, when people went back to school and saw what everybody was wearing and decided to go back and buy whatever is supposed to be cool that season. And so a lot of that sort of back and forth is being eliminated when there's a set uniform.
Now that we're talking about the retail part of this, how has this affected the bottom line at retailers? One might imagine that the fewer pieces of clothing that have to be sold, that would impact the bottom line for companies like Walmart and Target, maybe even Amazon.
Yeah, a lot of companies are pitching uniforms as sort of a very low-cost way into back-to-school shopping. I mean, they're saying that you can buy a year's worth of items for $100 or less, which is significantly less in some cases than, you know, if you were putting together your own outfits and buying designer jeans and name brand sweatshirts and what have you. So they are trying to make up for this in other ways, though. We're seeing more varieties of backpacks and sneakers, even like funkier socks and hair accessories, ways that kids can still express themselves and spend money even when they're wearing a uniform.
And some have embraced it as well. Your story talks about Old Navy creating a uniform hub in its stores, all of its stores, these places where they're making that now the central focus of
part of the retail landscape inside of their stores. Talk to us a little bit about how they're embracing this.
Exactly. And this is part of a much larger trend where we're seeing mainstream retailers. I mean, it used to be that you would go to a specific uniform retailer or there would be a handful of specialty shops. Now we're seeing Walmart, Target, Amazon, Old Navy, Carter's, just any big name department store or chain is getting into this business. And Old Navy in particular has really doubled down. They have created these uniform hubs in all 1,100 of their stores. And these are sort of, you know, places where you can go. It's a one-stop shop. You can see all of the uniforms in a row and all the different colors you might need and all the sizes that they come in. And then sort of right next to that is all of your accessories and the backpacks and underwear and what have you.
Back to school is a big time for retailers that from, widening out our conversation a little bit. By all measures, this back to school season is going to be good for retailers or no?
You know, it's a little too soon to tell. Parents are expected to spend more, but you know, it's also, there are a lot of other economic factors going on. So I think retailers are a bit nervous, especially because back-to-school season is a real bellwether for the upcoming holiday season. So their performance now sort of sets the tone for the rest of the year.
The toddler uniforms, I'm sure that's probably a difficult one for parents to find or no. Is it are more of the stores that we've been talking about embracing the toddler part of this as well?
Yes. Almost all of the mainstream retailers I mentioned, from Walmart to Carter's to Kohl's and Old Navy, all have uniforms in toddler sizes now. And a lot of the daycares also said that, you know, they're a little less strict with toddlers. They might not have to have a polo shirt and khakis every day. It might just be like, you know, wearing a white T-shirt and blue bottoms or something like that.
Well, Abba, we appreciate you being on this morning and sharing this reporting with us. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Abba Badarai, a retail reporter at the Washington Post. We're going to link out to her latest story on school uniforms on the rise and its impact on the retail world coming up in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are up nearly 56 points. Nearly a quarter of a percent. Same story over at the S&P and NASDAQ. Markets in Europe and Asia are generally in the green this morning. Let's get the update on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. First of all, let's check conditions in the number two pork-producing state in the country, North Carolina, where Hurricane Dorian struck over the weekend. And according to the North Carolina Pork Council, there are no reports of significant impacts to the more than 2,000 hog farms in that state. Surveying by the North Carolina Pork Council indicates some scattered farm-level power outages, but on-farm generators were operating with ample fuel supplies. Wind damage has been minimal. Livestock and feed movements are beginning to occur in multiple locations. And what about the lagoons on those pork farms? Well, they survived pretty well, have been well managed throughout the summer growing season, and no major breakthroughs on those lagoons overflowing. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government has confirmed it will suspend UK Parliament later today until October 14th. The spokesperson says Parliament will be prorogued or suspended at the close of the day's business today. Johnson has previously said he would send British lawmakers home sometime this week. The suspension limits Parliament's ability to block Johnson's plans for Brexit. Johnson says the UK must leave the EU on October 31st with or without a divorce agreement. Also today, we're watching another story involving the company Target. Back to our retail conversation, Target says it's about to launch a new loyalty program called Target Circle nationwide beginning October 6th. The Target program will include new perks like a birthday reward in five markets that it'll start out initially, including in Charlotte, North Carolina, and in Phoenix. Prior to that, Target Circle was being tested more quietly in Dallas. Target says that over the span of 18 months, more than 2 million people have already enrolled in Target Circle, which doesn't require the person to pay a membership fee or have a Target credit card. It says those people have completed more than 14 million transactions, and that people using Target Circle are spending more in stores and online than those enrolled in the loyalty program. Expect that nationwide rollout coming again by October after the few markets that it's in are expanded. The Supreme Court is about to weigh in on a racial discrimination lawsuit involving Comcast and Los Angeles-based media company owned by comedian and media mogul Byron Allen. A lower court ruled in favor of Allen, who says Comcast declined to distribute its channels because he's black. If Allen prevails, black-owned businesses will have an easier time winning suits that allege discrimination in contracting. If Comcast wins, the bar will be high to bring and succeed with similar lawsuits from elsewhere in the country. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Monday, September the 9th. The consumer credit charge for July is due out today. Analysts expect to see Americans' consumer credit balances growing by nearly $15.9 billion. We expect to get the consumer credit change a little bit later on today. It's also a day in the UK for monthly GDP and industrial production. As we look ahead to the rest of the week, and an Apple iPhone report and event tomorrow, the Apple 11 event as it's being billed. We'll also get numbers on U.S. business sentiment. The producer price index is out on Wednesday. On Thursday, consumer price index, earnings from a couple of retail companies, the grocery industry in focus on Thursday. And then on Friday, retail sales and the University of Michigan consumer sentiment survey. So plenty of things to move the markets this week and today on this Monday, September the 9th.